हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, chapter 3, verses 1 to 2. Arjuna asked, if intelligence is better than work, why does Krishna ask him to engage in such a ghastly warfare? He wants Krishna to clear up the apparent confusion for his benefit. Right? So we notice here is that it's not because a fault is found that makes the position superior. Because the fault is found, therefore now he doesn't have to listen to what he says. Right? Because here then, if one's taking the position of a student, then that means one takes it that one's not that clever. Right? That if one sees a fault, then that must mean one's own mistake. Right? Because otherwise one would have to be very confident that I find a fault and that I'm right. Because otherwise, why are you the student? Right? No, there's a doubt I don't understand. So could you please explain? Because many things, if they're not, but depending on the context, they may seem different. Right? So when the context is made very clear, the situation is made clear, or other aspects about the goal are made clear, then it works very nicely. Does this make sense? Right. So we have to be very careful to, in other words, Arjuna is a good student, right? So just as much as he's an illusion, right? So he's good at, you know, this aspect of him being an illusion, to that degree he's also good at being a student, right? In other words, the whole thing is very complete. In 249, Krishna said, O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by buddhi yoga, devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Right? Arjuna is confused because he thinks that buddhi yoga means inaction. Right? This is standard. Right? The standard conditioned consciousness will say that I'm entangled because of material activities. So spiritual means no activities, therefore no entanglement. Right? This is standard, like that. There basically is not another alternative, because they'll say it's different. Does that make sense? Like that. Arjuna, okay. If he is to keep abominable activities far away by buddhi, why does Krishna urge him to fight in the most abominable of all wars? Right? So this doesn't make sense. He says keep all abominable acts, but the point that we'll be seeing, the point of, is the definition of abominable. Right? Because he's looking at it from a moralistic or a religious viewpoint, therefore he's defining abominable. But the real point or purpose of morality and religion, that he's not catching. That's what's missing. Right? So his definitions are wrong. Therefore, his conclusion is wrong. So in the purport, Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness or buddhi yoga or intelligence as spiritual advancement of knowledge as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fight by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to the best course of action. Right? Now, this is what he wanted to do. But, so that's what causes the doubt. Right? Because the doubt may be due to you just don't sincerely don't understand. The other is that you don't understand because you have a different idea. You see it working in a different way. Right? But because he's a good student, he still places it before the teacher to make that decision. Right? Misgiving will be that he sees his plan is different than what the authority is giving, and he thinks the authority is wrong. Right? So therefore, he doesn't need to follow the authority. He'll follow his own path. And even if it's explained to him, it won't change his opinion. Right? That's a misgiving. Right? So misgivings, by purifying the heart, only one can move forward from that. Right? But a doubt, then one through intelligence can understand the difference. Does this make sense? But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as the best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. So in other words, the idea of this chapter, we can see what Prabhupada is saying here, is going to establish that how to work in Krishna consciousness. In other words, how to make all of one's activities spiritual. Otherwise, there's going to be, we're going to take chanting our japa, mangalarti, guru puja, you know, coming up to the devotees and saying, you know, Hari Bol, please accept my humble obeisances, you know, taking prasad, you know, these kind of things. We'll take that as spiritual, right? Going out in Harinam, that'll be spiritual. Like that, distributing books will be spiritual, you know, and if we've been trained appropriate by our spirit, by our temple president, going out and collecting money will also be spiritual. You understand? So all these different things we'll see there. But anything else other than that, we might have a question about. Right? Because Arjuna has that question. He has this question. So to clear that means this question comes up because it's not obvious. How one can take ordinary activities in one's own mind and make them spiritual. The same activity that binds you is the same activity that frees you. Right? But it's very straightforward, right? You get locked in a room by a key. You get freed from the room by the key. It's the same action. That makes sense. You eat the right amount, right kind of food in the right season, you make yourself healthy. You don't do that properly, you make yourself sick. You know, probably gives the example. You take milk, it gives you, you know, diarrhea. So you take milk in a different form and it cures. You understand? So this transformation that is there means it's transformed by Krishna consciousness. Right? And so now we'll see all these various ways in which this Krishna consciousness can be applied in our daily life. Right? So that's the first point, is that establishing that Krishna consciousness can be applied in your daily life. Right? Because otherwise, my daily life is automatically spiritual. No, your daily life only becomes spiritual when it's connected, when it becomes yoga. If it's not connected, it's keeping you here. Right? But it's connected, it's freeing you from here. In the second chapter, Krishna explained karma and jnana yoga. Arjuna misunderstood that they are two different incompatible processes leading to different goals, and that he should choose one of them. Right? So intelligence is better than work. So then he takes jnana. He doesn't understand they go together. So this is very, very common. We should always remember is that what Arjuna, the bewilderment he's going through that bewilderment because that's the bewilderment we go through. Therefore, in verse 3.3.2, Arjuna asks Krishna to tell him decisively which process is the best. The Lord answers that jnana and karma are in fact two stages of the same progression, and thus they are not contradictory. Arjuna should combine them and thus free himself from bondage of work. In this commentary to Bhagavad Gita 33, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan writes, the word nishta, or steadiness, is in singular rather than in dual to indicate that there is only one steadiness. in the sense that both types of nishta, karma yoga and jnana yoga, have only one goal, that of realizing atma. There are not two nishtas, and with two different sadhanas and sadhyas, but rather one steadiness of two types with the same goal. Right? Do we understand? So in other words, you're fixed in karma yoga, or you're fixed in jnana yoga. Then one would think that there are two different methods, two different paths. But he's pointing out that it's only one path. Krishna says very clearly later, there's only one path. It's just a matter of what you're doing with the path determines which way you're going and how far you get. That's all. There's only one path. There's not more than one. Right? So here is that, because otherwise, as they mentioned, it would be in dual. You're talking about two things. There is a case for that. Right? In Sanskrit, you have singular, dual, and plural. Right? So you're talking about two things here. It would have been in dual, but it's not. It's talked in singular. And also, it's important to note that it is the same thing on two different levels in a progression. Right? Does that make sense? But it's still one thing. It's very important, because sometimes we take this term yoga ladder to mean that you do this, then that's done, then the next thing, then it's done, then the next thing. Right? And they're completely different. But the point is if you look at it as, you know, it means, what does the term ladder mean? Ladder means it's one thing that you can elevate yourself with. It's not many things. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when we say ladder, we don't mean, you know, little box with arrow, then next little box, and then another arrow, next little box. No. Ladder means it's one thing. That one thing will elevate you, but there are stages in the elevation. You understand? Then yoga ladder becomes a very good term, because it's one thing. But otherwise, if we just see it as, you know, something, then the next, and they're not connected, then we've misunderstood the term. Okay? Yes? We're all clear on this? Right. Verses 3 to 9. Buddhi yoga is better than false renunciation. At the beginning of third chapter, Arjuna asks which is better, renunciation or work. In verses 3 to 9, the Lord explains that since selfish activities bring bondage, and inaction is impossible, detached work for his pleasure is the best course of action. Right? In other words, we'll think there's so many options, but it's either you're going to do the work that is, but you're motivated by, right? Like that. Or the next alternative, as Arjuna gave, then you do nothing. But that's not possible for the soul. It's not an option. People like to toy with it as if it is an option, but it's not. Right? That's the meaning of mental speculators. Right? Is they toy with ideas that actually have no reality. Because if they had reality, wouldn't it have worked? Right? Wouldn't people now be... It's like this. What happens? Like somebody figures out, you know, that you know, if you have kind of a round thing and put a hole in it, then it makes moving things about easier, right? Right? And so there, from there, then it comes out, you know, the one wheel, you know, then you have your wheelbarrow and everything like that, and, you know, Freddie rides around on a unicycle, you know, like this. And, you know, so it slowly builds up, right? And then you have, you know, some very advanced technical things of wheels. Why? Because it worked. Therefore, it develops. Is it going around in a circle? Right? You know, you find there, and then, you know, it builds up to a car, and then people go, oh, this doesn't quite work, and then it goes back down until they're riding around on unicycles again, right? That's how we see it's going, right?
No.
No. So why not?
Because there's no need to it work.
There's no need to it work. But in these various philosophies and social ideas and customs, how does it go? Is it building one on another? No, it's going in cycles. So what does that mean? It didn't work.
So it's like the grass is greener on the other side. When I get to this side, I want to go back to that side.
That's something, but it just means it didn't work. It means it was a theory that didn't have anything to do with reality. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's of course something to do with reality, you know. But it doesn't mean that it was practically applicable. So therefore it keeps changing. Right? So that's the point, is this idea of inaction doesn't work. Otherwise, why does it come back around? Because it doesn't work for the soul. So that means is that that only leaves then your second alternative is working to please the Lord. So either you work to please yourself for your own material purpose, no matter how undignified or dignified, or you work for God. These are the only two alternatives. There's not a third alternative. Man tries to create this third alternative, but it doesn't actually exist. Right? Understand? So that's why karma yoga seems so strange. It's because you're doing activity, the same activity, get the same results, but now it becomes spiritual. I didn't change, because it's like I changed the whole method, then that means it's spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Right? It's just like, now we hear about the stories of like saintly persons, you know, in the Western tradition. And it seems that they're quite nice people, right? Quite normal people. No? You know, comfortable to be around and everything like that. Everybody likes them. But now if you ever see any kind of theatrical depiction of a very spiritually advanced person, they always portray the part as something completely abnormal. Nothing to do with everybody else. Always has this wild look, or, you know, they're not connected with what's going on, and, you know, all this kind of thing, no? And they always have to do some kind of far out hairdo, right? You understand? So that's the thing, is that they can't understand that, no, spiritual is the most normal. Right? Like once I heard one God brother, once he was making a comment, Prabhupada is the most normal person. He didn't mean normal and ordinary, he means normal as he's not crazy. Right? Everybody else is crazy. He's not. He's normal. Right? In other words, spiritual is normal. So performing the activity to please God, that's normal. Performing the activity to please yourself, that's abnormal. Does that make sense? Yes.
All right, then what is the motive of the people? They want to create this short option.
This short option, because then it still leaves them in the absolute position. Because I'm still the controller. Right? I mean, just look at it. Means just as an example, because one would think, well, why would that be? Why would there be the element that God has created the world, but he's not actually in control of it?
So that we can be in control.
Yes. It leaves us in control. You know, we'll put it on Satan. But who did the activity? Us. Right?
So we do the crime, blame it on someone else.
Yeah, blame it on someone else, and then, you know, God's out of the picture. At the same time as if we have faith in God, but who is the one that's freeing us?
We.
Ourselves. Because of our faith, therefore we're freed. Because God has no control in the world. Right? Satan does. But if we have faith in God, then we can get over Satan's influence. So as God only has, you know, influence when we get free from the material entanglement. Right? And then we can understand is what is the motive for having that faith?
To go to heaven.
You understand? And who gets the benefit of that?
We do.
We do, right? God's already there, you know? right? I mean, it starts to become crowded for him, right? You know, so, you know, so I can, we'll take up all the good spots and everything like that. So it's not explained that there's a relationship with him. Right? In fact, the concept that God in the Garden of Eden was moving with Adam and Eve, they take him not to be the supreme, as Godhead himself, but as a, I think, demiurge, is that how you say it? Like that. It means he's a lower God. He's a lower manifestation. And actually, some will say, he's the Satan. Right? This is how weird their theological discussions become. They can't discern because they can't tell that material is part of God's creation. It's in his control. But because you perform your action, it's action and reaction. They'll say, do good work, you get good results. And so they accept the basic element of karma. But they can't see the overall of karma. Because I can see this, right? So I did the work, I get the result. But what they can't understand is you've done work in the past that maybe you get a good result, but maybe you're getting a bad result now. So that, then, because you can't blame it on God, right? No, you'd like to, but you don't, so you blame it on Satan. But we, it's never blamed on herself. We only get the credit for doing good work, right? Of course, the sinner, of course, is there, but you understand? So the thing is very, very mixed. The idea is that the living entity doesn't want to give up. So in the impersonal concept does not give up, I am the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because it's I control, I perform my sadhana, I come to the platform Brahmananda where I enjoy the ananda of Brahman. Right? So there's nothing beyond I am the controller and enjoyer. So here it's a matter, you're doing the same work but to please God. So what's left out?
You.
Yeah, us. We're not the controller and the enjoyer. We're part of a relationship with God. Right? So that means nothing has to change. We change it because we're changing whether we want to be in the material world or out of the material world, right? Whether we're optimistic or pessimistic. Basically, that's all there is. In your philosophies and religions, it's basically optimism and pessimism. That's basically what it is, right? Optimism is you do good work, you'll enjoy here, you'll get a good result. Pessimism is, you know, you can do all the good work you want, but still you're not happy, so therefore just try to, remove your existence. You understand? Then you can have whether, what the soul is made out of, or, you know, how long he's there, or whether you have a deity, or what deity, or whether it's the Supreme Lord or not. That's all varieties within these two, but that's all there is in philosophy. It's these two are combinations. The mundane can't go beyond karma and gyan. Right? So that's why in the beginning of Gita, then the spirit has to be there that you understand that there's something beyond. Right? There is such a thing as spiritual that is personal, that actually deals with our position, God's position in the material world, in reality, what's going on now. Is that okay? Yes.
Sometimes devotees will use this point, or misuse this point, you know, that nothing changed, whatever is already there, or is connected to Krishna.
But don't
to
connect.
Reject prescribed duties of an ashram.
Yes, like that. But the point is that your nothing changes, but the consciousness changes. So Vedic doesn't mean something changes. Like, okay, in the Western system, when you eat, you pick things up and put it in your mouth, chew it, swallow it, right? So in the Vedic, it's different than that, right? No, it's the same thing. It's just a matter of how you pick it up, right? So the thing is that let's say, I mean, things may have times, I'll give an example, things may have changed so much since that this doesn't apply, but I'll give it a shot anyway, okay? Let us say you're sitting at the table and it's kind of more of a formal environment. Can you put your elbows on the table?
No.
Right? You shouldn't, okay? So now, why is that? Right? Why do people do it? Right?
They're
right? It's relaxed, you know, you can pick things up, you don't have to. So it's not that it's inefficient. So what's the consideration? Polite, cultured, gentlemanly, right? So therefore, if that's in other words, eating becomes, I'd say, not an altered, defined, or developed through the medium of culture, right? So all it is, so is it such a different concept between uncultured eating and cultured eating? Right? I mean, there's the element of culture, but the principle is the same. So the only consideration is it more cultured or less? Right? Like more refined or less refined? So Vedic means more refined. That's all. The considerations are more refinement. It's more, how do you say? Efficient. Right? Means, yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, when devotees say the Vedic is unimportant, means they're saying I'm not refined enough to either appreciate it or be able to apply it. Because it takes more refinement. Just like if you tell, you know, the uncultured person take your elbows off the table, then well, what's the problem, you know? I say, you know, you're so, you know, aristocratic and hoity-toity. They could go on and on and on making complaints. But it's just a matter of culture. It's not that it changes it. The Vedic doesn't change, right? Is it a change in eating that whether your elbows are on the table or not? As far as culture goes, it means it's a refinement because that's the medium. But if you look at it as ritual, then you'll say, yes, it's a big difference. Right? So devotees are looking at the Vedic as ritual rather than culture. Right? What does Prabhupada call? Does he say the ritual of Krishna consciousness, of devotional service, or the culture of Krishna devotional service? Culture. So culture is the point, not ritual. Right? Ritual is just the form of that culture. So it's not a different, how you say, the method is not different. It's just, it's because of the cultural appreciation. That's why it's considered higher. That's why it's recommended. Right? Krishna's the most cultured. Right? Would devotees generally accept that principle?
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, wouldn't you want to use the most cultured ritual to interact with him? Right? So that's what the Vedic system defines. It defines that culture which is common with God, how God likes to act. So therefore it works. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not that these other things aren't known, the situation's there. You know, you're out at some formal dinner outside somewhere, they expect you to eat with all the forks and knives and this and that. Then, you know, technically speaking, according to the Vedic thing, it's something that one would know. But as one's own personal culture, one wouldn't use it. But if you need, you use it. Does that make sense? Like Yudhishthir, what does he speak? What language?
Sanskrit.
Yes, but when he and Vidura were discussing before going to the forest, what language were they speaking?
Some
Malecha language, like that, you know. And in the Vedas, generally the Malechas refer to, you know, some people that are kind of more north-west of India, right? Like that. And so, but, you know, and does that make sense? So that means he was speaking a language that was used by these tribals. How could he do that?
He studied it.
How is it Vidura knew it? He studied it. So why would two people who are kings, you know, and in their royal family, why would they study this?
Because they were planning to do something with those people.
Yes, that's there, but where would the idea come from? Does the nobility do anything just whimsically?
There's a plan.
There's a plan. Where does the plan come from?
God.
And how does that plan of God come to us?
Shastra.
You can make a good movie, right? The plan of God. Does that make sense? So that means the Kshatriyas following Shastra, they know the Malecha language. You understand? But does the Malecha curriculum include Sanskrit? No. So this is the point. We're trying to say is that it's a, you know, some archaic thing. No, it already includes Mlechas and Yavanas, technical things, arts, sciences, those have been there since time immemorial. It's just depending upon the consciousness whether you take them as more important or not. In the other ages, less important. In this age, more important. But it's always been there. Right? Does that make sense? So this idea is that I just continue to do what I'm doing and I don't actually connect it to Krishna means you're not getting the benefit. Or to think, I don't have to change anything, therefore I don't have to follow these Vedic things, then that's all right as long as you accept the cultural position that goes along with it. Right? Let's say Pancharatra. That's above the Vedic. So you can't say, I don't follow the Vedic, so because we don't follow the rules and regulations. Pancharatra is there because the soul's conditioned, so those rules are rules you have to follow. Vedic, you may need to follow them or not, you could say that. But Pancharatrik, no conditioned soul can claim he's free from that. Right? So that says you do take a bath, do achman, these, then you're qualified to worship the deity. So if someone says, I don't care for these rules, then what's the meaning? Then it would be like saying, it says, you know, I'm cooking lunch. It says, no, but you don't know how to cook. It says, that doesn't matter. You know, we're devotees. We're above the rules and regulations. You know, so yeah, go for it, yeah, cool, you know. You know what I'm saying? No one would say that's right. So the point is this, they're not functioning within the area. The point is, if you're above the rules and regulations, why would you be involved in deity worship? You know? Management and all that, isn't that lower? Yeah. Right? Even within the material system, administration and management is lower than the platform of knowledge. Right? And then above the platform of knowledge is the platform of devotion. Right? So it's the platform of devotion that makes one free from these lower. So why is it that we're free from the intellectual aspects and for the aspects that are favorable in the devotional? But, you know, we're being very practical and down to earth by being absorbed in even a lower level of consciousness and lower level of activity. Does this make sense? Right, we skip the transcendental position that is defined by the Brahminical culture, right, and Brahminical activities, and then drop us and say that's not important because we practice devotional service, but then make it very clear that it's very important to work on the Kshatriya and Vaishya and Shudra levels. You understand? But the Brahminical is not important. Does that make sense? Right? So, that's not logical. That's not intelligence. That's not buddhi yoga, which means yoga using your intelligence. Right? It may be engaging your conditioned nature, but who defines that actually it is karma yoga, it is buddhi yoga. That's the scriptures, not us. So we can't speculate, right? That's what was talked about before. The many paths means you speculate on different ways it can work. But if it's not connected to the Supreme, it is many paths. Oh, we did this, we did that, that didn't work. So now we'll do it like this, we'll do it like that. But the point is it's still not connected to the Supreme. Yeah. So it's many branched. So it's not that when it talks about that the intelligence is many branches, only talking about the gross materialistic, you know, worshiper of the demigods. Right? And even if it was, that's the only application, then one is Arjuna suggesting worship of demigods. No, why would it come up then? You know? Two, even if it is discussing that, then is Krishna commenting upon their performance of ritual and lifestyle, that they're following the Vedas? Is that what he's complaining about? No, he's saying that you're following the Vedas, but your intelligence is many-branched. It's not focused on the one supreme, on the order of Guru. You understand? So then where would it come that, okay, we're throwing all this out, so also all goes all the culture. Right? Does this make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you fight in consciousness of me, you will not incur sin.
Right.
And he also says if you remember me at the time of death, then you will come to me.
Right.
So how can we understand that it's not by our endeavor that we are becoming free from the materialism?
It's not by our endeavor. Because the point is this, means you're making the endeavor, but the point is that is what is that endeavor based on?
Desire to please the Lord.
And those things that please the Lord, where did they come from? Did we create those things that please the Lord?
No.
So that means there's already a process to please the Lord that has been there since time immemorial. Right? And so that's the point, you know, that verse, that famous verse, Ruhuganai tapasa nayati, you know, it's about following in the footsteps of the great acharyas. Because it works. Right? So, we are making the endeavor to follow that. So, that endeavor, that's what's pleasing. But the point is, the result has come by Krishna. The path is already created by Krishna. So, we can take part in the endeavor. Right? By having the right consciousness of our position and the goal. In other words, endeavor is what is practically done. Right? Sambandha and Prayojana are understandings, proper mentalities. Right? In other words, you're not doing something in that. You do something in the activity. Right? So being involved in the activity, that means your commitment to the relationship. But the environment in which it is done has already been established. Right? If the materialist thinks, I'm making the endeavor, I created the field, I'm creating the results, therefore the field and the results are mine. But he doesn't understand that, no, the field already existed before you came, it will be there after you're gone. And the results come by the, you know, arrangement of the Lord. Not by something else. Does that make sense? So in other words, one's involved, that's why one gets credit. Arjuna gets credit for fighting. Right? But it's still within, because what's important is the endeavor and the relationship. Relationship being important, the endeavor in that, that's what's important. Right? Okay. Yeah. There are two ways by which the self... Okay. There are two ways by which the self can be realized. The process of detached work, karma yoga, or buddhi yoga, and the process of philosophical speculation, which entails renouncing the work, jnana yoga. Both processes are authoritative, but one should guard against premature renunciation. Jnana yoga can be adopted only after sufficient purification through performance of prescribed duties. Premature renunciation cannot purify the heart and is therefore rejected by the Lord. The honest householder engaged in karma yoga is better than the mithyachari pretender. In the purport of verse 4, Srila Prabhupada writes, the renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification, one cannot obtain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life, sannyas. According to the empirical philosophers, simply by adopting sannyas or retiring from fruitive activities, one at once becomes as good as Narayana. But Lord Krishna does not approve this principle. Without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord, Buddha Yoga. So in here we're seeing Karma Yoga. It means in here we're looking at the element, because these terms are, how you say, overlapping. There's many ways that we use. So Karma Yoga, Buddha Yoga are the same. At the same time as, you know, and here we're giving Jnana Yoga as separate. But also this is a matter of Jnana Yoga, what it is that you're connecting with. So the Jnana being applied in Naishkarmya, right, will elevate you. But the problem is it will only elevate you once you're to a certain standard. But if you have material desires, it can't free you from that. Right? It's only by karma, by engaging those desires for a higher purpose, can they be purified. Right? Once one actually is detached, then the path of jnana can function. But the only path that can get you there is karma. Does that make sense? So this combination then, that's your Buddha Yoga. You're using that. That will get you to that position. So then in this case, means in other words, that by renouncing family life doesn't mean that the purification is obtained. Right? So the Maya bodies are taking it that this is the way it works. Right? They take it that simply by accepting it, then you've elevated yourself to that platform. You may have put yourself in the situation of elevation, but whether you can actually take advantage of that situation, that they have not determined. Right? But you can only do that if you properly perform. That's why the general tendency is someone's brahmachari, then they get married, then they take sannyas. Right? Because through that, then they've gone through the activities, engaged and purified, then they come to that position. Does that make sense? So if someone is able to go from brahmachari straight into sannyas, then we can understand they've done this process previously. But it's not that it's not done. Does that make sense? It's done. Right? And so we see with the acharyas to set example, then they'll set example. They'll do things that we would need to do to get ourselves to that position, but they'll do it very quickly. Right? Like how long was Shankaracharya a brahmachari?
9 years. 9?
I heard he took sannyas at 6, but you know, whatever, 6 or 9, okay.
9 is 1.
He was 12, I heard. Somebody else is 9. It's gotta be a 9, right? It's gotta be good, number 9, right? You know, it's gotta be something important. But, you know, maybe, okay? So, the idea is that, so they show, but how long do they do? But they go, it's like Krishna and Balaram, they go to the Gurukul. How long are they in the Gurukul?
6 to 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah, so they learn everything in that short time, but they went to the Gurukul. You understand? That's the whole idea. Lord Chaitanya went to the Gurukul. But at 16, he opened his own school. You know what I'm saying? So they show, they go through it quicker, but they'll show what's important. Okay. So in other words, it's not by putting yourself in that situation that you're automatically there. Does that make sense? So that's why we see, just as you'll find persons who have, you know, taken up the sannyas order aren't always able to maintain it. Same way as those who are grihasthas who leave that and take up that position, not necessarily sannyas, but so-called detached, it's not necessarily that they can maintain it. But because they're not sannyasis, no one really cares. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. But it's the same principle. In verse 5, Krishna explains that the soul cannot remain inactive. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, it's not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active, right? So it's not that because the soul is in embodied, therefore they're active, but the soul by nature is inactive. No, it's not a matter of that. It's the nature of the soul. Right? Because if it wasn't, then what? Oh, maybe, let's see here. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. Right? In other words, the body is alive because there's a soul there, and it moves around. As soon as you remove the soul, it doesn't do anything. So it's not the body that creates the activity of the soul. The soul is inherently active. Right? There's not a time that one's not doing, and one's even just breathing or dreaming or, you know, something's going on. Because that's the nature of the soul. Since inactivity is not an option, Arjuna's only choice is between proper and improper activities, right? Proper meaning connected to the Lord, improper meaning not connected, right? Of course, in not connected, we can also take what is considered to be proper and improper, right? Just like in the path of materialism, the karmis, then they'll say good work is doing moralistic activities, nice work that's good for everybody, right? And then the pessimists, the impersonalists and all that, they'll say exactly the same thing. You know, doing good work and everything, right? You hear about it? Buddhists, do they do nice work, good work? Yeah. What about the impersonalists? Are they doing nice work, giving a charity, opening schools and stuff? Yeah. So they all say that. You have to do good work. But it's not connected to the Lord. So it's good work on the material platform. So yes, you can say, within the materialism, you have two choices. Right? But one choice is what's established by God, and one choice you just make up. Right? So whether you accept it as coming from God, or you just think you're being a nice guy, that's also your option. Point is, you always have, if it's connected to God or not. Right? So directly means you do the activity for God, that's Buddha Yoga. Indirectly, you do it because that's, you know, the Shastric direction, it's like this, then that means it's pious. Right? Does that make sense? Or you decide yourself, this is good, this is not, but where did the principle of good and bad come from? God's created the concept. So even there, that you're following that concept, still, you're following God's law. But, since you don't acknowledge God, you're an illusion. Right? See? Since inactivity is not an option, Arjuna's only choice is between proper and improper activities. The proper activities should be performed with proper consciousness. One should act not only with detached, as recommended in verse 3 to 8, detachment, but with desire to please the Lord, verse 9. This is the perfection of karma yoga. Srila Prabhupada describes the stage in the message of Godhead. One must not enjoy the fruits of his work himself, but must dedicate the same for the transcendental loving service of the personality of Godhead. This is the first step on the ladder of devotional activities. Lord Chaitanya taught this process of devotional service, or work with transcendental results, to Srila Rupa Goswami, at Dashrameda Ghat in Prayag. Lord Chaitanya said that only one who is fortunate can get the seed of transcendental loving service by the mercy of Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and that of the spiritual master. Karma yoga, or work with transcendental results, is the seed of pure devotional activities. Right? So see, there's the root there. There's something that's based on these instructions, these directions. Right? That gives a ladder. So it's based on something, right? It's not an ethereal ladder. Right? So here is that proper work should have proper consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, that gives you, within this, then you have, you know, the doing proper work or not proper work. So now, in doing proper work, you have two choices. Right? Doing it in proper consciousness or not. Right? Does that make sense? So, we have improper activity basically has not proper consciousness. Right? But proper activity could have improper consciousness or proper consciousness. Right? So what is proper consciousness? Krishna conscious, and what is proper activity?
Devotional service.
But when, how does it become devotional service? When it's connected. So when the consciousness is proper, then proper activity becomes Krishna consciousness. Right? So what is that proper activity?
Prescribed duties.
Prescribed duties, what the Shastra gives. Does it make sense? So in other words, we take it that this third option doesn't really exist. Does this make sense? So improper activity is improper consciousness. So there's proper activities, proper consciousness. Right? But we don't connect that proper activities is the same activities you could do properly with improper consciousness. That makes sense? So we take it that the proper activities are something completely different. Does that make sense? So that's why sadhana we can generally connect. Generally devotees do pretty good on that. Right? And they can tell whether it's mixed with karma, jnana, and other things like that. Direct devotional activities. But when it comes to those activities that are proper activities, but they don't have proper consciousness connected to it, they can't tell the difference. They can't tell what it is. Right? In other words, it's proper activities, so they're doing it, you know, if they're Krishna conscious, they're doing proper activities. So any activity that's defined as proper activity then must automatically be connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So because proper consciousness is connected, naturally connected to proper activity. Right? So that means, and if I'm doing any activity that I consider as right, that's proper activity. Right? So therefore, what activities I consider proper are automatically Krishna conscious. You understand the logic that's being used? But where's the fault? Yeah, I considered. Let us say it's even scriptural. So I'm not considering. What's the weakness?
There's a gap.
Yes, but what's that gap? What's the fallacy in the logic?
They're saying that all A's are B's, therefore all B's are A's.
Yeah, well I'm saying that all those are A, B, C. So C is A. So they're taking it that proper activity, I'm automatically Krishna conscious. No, but it's because you perform the activity in Krishna consciousness makes it Krishna conscious. So you have proper activity. So it can either be performed in proper consciousness or not. So they're saying because I'm a devotee, I'm doing it in proper consciousness. Therefore, any activity I do that's approved is Krishna conscious. But it may not be. And then you have the stretch where, you know, what? Therefore, Shastra is good work, so therefore whatever I would, by my conditioning, call good work is also good work. So therefore, even that is automatically Krishna conscious. Do we see the fallacy in the logic here? Right? Logic's always that simple. It's just finding its application, you know, where it's being applied. You know, what's A, what's B, and what's C? You know? And therefore, what we're not connecting it. Does it make sense? Are we catching this? This overlap? In other words, there's two options, but in there you have the activities. They overlap. Good activity, proper activity can be spiritual or material. Generally speaking, and we could say improper activity could also be spiritual, you connect it to Krishna. But generally speaking, people who perform improper activity generally don't have proper consciousness. Right? Because it's the pious person who is able to appreciate proper consciousness. Right? So the overlap comes at proper activity. So proper activity can be done in Krishna consciousness or not. Right? So that means real proper activity is in Krishna consciousness. And proper activity that's not Krishna conscious, we will say, actually, it's not proper activity. So we could categorize pious activities recommended in scriptures not being done for Krishna as impious, as improper activity. In other words, the activity and the consciousness go together. Like buddhi yoga means intelligence, you know, consciousness and activity go together. Right? Does that make sense? So we the activity, that's another means that by practice you get the skill. Right? Knowledge, you can gain the knowledge quite easily. Right? Now consciousness, that's the thing we're having to cultivate. Right? So now, here is the point where the connection, right? We have the activity, that we can do. Intelligence is there, of course it has to be cultivated. But generally that's also a quick thing. But the point is what is that intelligence now based on? Shastra, okay, but in relation to what we're discussing here. What's missing? I have activity, I have I have intelligence.
Oh, goal.
Goal?
Applied.
Krishna. Krishna and Krishna.
Consciousness.
Okay. So, okay, called consciousness. Okay? So that means we may not have Krishna consciousness, but our intelligence is being based on the principles of Krishna consciousness. You understand?
Can you say in this formula, consciousness would be the prayojana?
You can say that's your goal, but it's also will become your method of working, will become your identity. That's the nice thing about devotional service, becomes the whole thing. But, same time in here, so what are we saying? We're saying we have the activity. That's A, right? Then we have the intelligence. That's B. So intelligence is connected to the activity. Then what? Our activity will be good or not?
Good,
right? It means if you combine intelligence and activity, you'll get a good result, right? Because intelligence means you know the field, you know how to operate, you know its purposes, you know what you can gain, right? So focus is there, right? So, and endeavor means applying the senses. So senses are controlled by intelligence, right? So that means, and when you say intelligence, means senses are being properly applied. So that's B. So B is connected to A that we've defined. Right? Now the point is B connected to C, which is consciousness. Right? So if the Krishna consciousness is there, right, then that will mean then the intelligence, it's the one, so therefore my activities are Krishna conscious. Right? My activity is connected to the intelligence, right? A is equal to B. B, the intelligence is connected to Krishna consciousness. I may or may not be, so, but it's based on that, right? So when I perform, and because B equals C, therefore when I perform the activities, right, with that intelligence based in Krishna consciousness, therefore A equals C. A means my activities equal Krishna consciousness. That's why karma yoga can be defined as Krishna consciousness. You understand? Does that make sense?
So, in the three subtle elements, so that false ego or that degree of false ego is what determines this.
Yeah, depends upon the level of consciousness, so means what it adds. But that's why you can have the new bhakta washing the pots and he's not thinking about Krishna one nanosecond. He's just thinking when he can finish and get, you know, some prasad. Well, I mean, he is thinking of Krishna, okay, his prasad. Okay, but the consciousness may not be that developed. Or someone else who's, you know, the head pujari comes in and he cooks an offering and he washes pots and he may be very elevated. But the process of washing the pot won't be any different. Right? The application of the intelligence, what's different is the consciousness, it's just developed. So, but both are getting the benefit. It's all devotional because it's all connected. Right? Does this make sense?
So the consciousness develops by applying the intelligence.
Yes, because your intelligence is based on, that's why it's called buddhi yoga. Otherwise it would just be called bhakti yoga.
Because we can't develop the consciousness on its own.
No, the consciousness is developed through cultivation because we have, you know, basically by our own determination, practice that I am the controller and enjoyer for a long time. Right? So if you have a bad habit, how do you correct it?
Create a good habit.
Create a good habit, yeah. Like that. So that takes some practice. So that's sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is a method to create the good habit so that you change that consciousness. Does this make sense? Right? Does everybody catch what we're doing here and the logic and everything like that? It means we'll study this specifically in the third year. You know, exactly how it works and what's all these things. But we can see what's a correct and what's incorrect. That's easy. Because logic is that simple. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so in other words, the person is doing the activity, you know, that you would do, you know, in Krishna consciousness. Okay? That's A. B, he's applying his intelligence to it. Okay. C, he's doing it because he wants to be recognized by the other devotees that he's, you know, really, you know, on top of it, you know, on top of his game, good manager, you know, good leader and everything like that. That's C. Right? So, is A Krishna conscious?
No.
But he's being done under the authority in Krishna consciousness. So, does it make it Krishna conscious?
It's touching,
right? In other words, this will be, there's something there, there's karma misra in there. In other words, it's the work is favorable to Krishna. But his consciousness is still polluted by karma jnana. So in this case, karma. You understand? So that's the impurity. It means C is not so strong. So how strong C is how strong A is. His consciousness is good and A is big. Right?
So the amount of purification.
Yes, so therefore if he continues doing it in good association, he'll become purified. So in the beginning he's motivated that everyone will recognize. And because he's using intelligence, then if Krishna allows, then he may be recognized. And then he'll start to figure out that this is not important. Or if he's not sincere, then it'll distract him and he'll think, you know, why am I, you know, managing in this small time kind of scene where hardly anybody recognize, I could go out in the corporate world and be very much appreciated. Right? It never happens, but you know, people think like that. You know. They generally end up pumping gas again or something, you know, like that. That's generally where you know what I'm saying? Yes.
What would be an example of the consciousness polluted by jnana?
Consciousness polluted by jnana? By performing this, I'll be freed from material attachments, and so material attachments make me suffer. So, being freed from them, I'll be happy. Right? You know, so it's in goodness as opposed to passion, but it's still it's still something there. Because, in other words, karma, you're trying to enjoy something, the fruit of result. Jnana, you're trying to be happy by removing the fruitive result. But in neither of them is Krishna the center. You can make Krishna the center, that's the process of the karma yoga and jnana yoga. Right? You know, in other words, we want to free ourselves from the material world and be freed from all this entanglement so we can, you know, please Krishna and serve in the spiritual world. Right? But much of the time we'll take it from that side rather than just, you know, we want to please Krishna and make him happy. You know, no matter whether we're in the material world or the spiritual world. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, of course, but, you know, I'd like to get out of here, you know.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah. Just as a side note.
And karma would be, you know, like, we like to do this because it's so nice to do nice things for Krishna.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay, so we understand is this proper activity naturally is proper consciousness. So what does that mean? What would be another application of this? Proper activity is supposed to be performed in proper consciousness. If we apply it back, what defines proper activity?
Proper consciousness.
Okay, but let us say, how do we know what is proper activity? According to the scriptures. So what does that mean?
We follow
scriptures, but if we apply proper activities to be performed with proper consciousness, what does that mean? Scriptures are to be performed in what way?
Proper consciousness.
And proper consciousness is?
Krishna consciousness.
Krishna consciousness. In other words, all the scriptures are to be engaged in Krishna's service. Because the scriptures define proper activity. Right? And so the consciousness that goes with proper activity is Krishna consciousness, right? So now what happens? Now here's just what we were discussing before, since we're on this logic and it's working, is you have those who support the Veda and following the Vedic culture, right? But it stands on its own that's proper. It's an end in itself. It's good enough. So, but the consciousness might not be there. So we'll call them smartas, you know? Does that make sense? So what have they missed? They missed the point is that the consciousness has to go along with the proper activity. Right? Does that make sense? And then the devotees, because they've heard of this, then when they say proper consciousness, then what do they much of the time define?
The activity doesn't matter.
Yeah, the activity of the shastra doesn't matter. It's the consciousness. Who has consciousness without activity?
The impersonalist.
The impersonalist. So in other words, all they've done, though it's connected to Krishna, that's there. One always has to take that connected to Krishna, it's always better, even if it's at the lowest level. But what have they replaced on the mundane viewpoint? What have they done? They've switched from... Yes, they've replaced karma, which is, I do the activity, that stands on its own as good. And the other is, I've removed the activity and just the consciousness stands on its own.
Because they're going to remain in jnana when they go back to karma.
Yes, they can't remain in jnana because they're not pure enough.
So they go to the lower ends of karma, which is irregulated activity.
Yes, so then they go back to what they were before taking up the shastra, which much of the time you just don't want to know about. Right? You know? Does this make sense? Do we see the logic here? Right? So in other words, we see is that the what's being meant here is very practical in our life for understanding how Krishna consciousness works. It's a science. So science means very clearly definable, very clearly observable. Right? But you have to apply it. That's the culture. That's the art. You understand? It means the science on its own, if you don't apply it, that's useless. Art on its own without the science, you know, basically is useless. Does that make sense? When the two are combined, then it works.
Because how much of science will have any direction? People will just...
Yeah, they don't do anything.
Here and there without any...
Yeah. It means they'll speculate... It means it's not going anywhere. And the other one, they'll be fixed in a certain thing, but at the same time, there's no basis of it. So with time, it will change. You know what I'm saying? The science, because they're not able to apply it, therefore they will change the science to try to come up with, by changing it, that it'll work. No, but work means you have to apply it. And the other is they're applying, but because they don't have any specific, definition, therefore it will adjust. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The man, in escaping the plague, comes to a place where they don't have the plague. Right? Now, because they don't have the plague, they term them as witches. Why? But what's the difference? Only they take a bath. Right? Now, then something happens so that you feel you've done something wrong and then you have to blame it on someone else, so you blame it on the witch. Right? Something goes wrong in your life. Right? Then, after that, you go looking for anybody who is different than how you think. And they're a witch. Right? Okay? And you say is that you're doing this because this is what God wants. Okay? Now, where is that evolved? How did that logic work? You have issues with witches. You've defined what is a witch. Did God define what was a witch? How does it work? Where's the logic? You understand? It's only sentiment. You understand this? But because of this logic, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, some say millions of people died because of this material logic that's so-called spiritual. You understand? That's why I was saying this is very, very practical. Then you can actually see if what you're doing is actually real in Krishna conscious, because the logic is complete, or you've allowed your own consciousness to become mixed in it and not seeing that. then you're actually doing something you say is God conscious, but it's not. You understand? Or it may be God conscious, but it's mixed. We're not saying that those persons then weren't in some way or another God conscious, but did the activity, where were the activities defined by and everything like this? You know what I'm saying? Their teacher. You know, someone come up and slap him in the face. What does he say? Right?
Oh, turn the other cheek.
Yeah, turn the other cheek. Let him slap you on the other side, you know. Makes them happy, you know, so whatever. So, but then what are they doing? Turning the other cheek means the person did nothing to you. Just you don't like them, so therefore you killed them. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the teacher would convert them and make them. This one, no, you just killed them first. Kill first, then talk. You understand? Where's the logic? But like this, religionists have not seen the logic in their theology and therefore misapplied it for, you know, as far as Western history goes, for thousands of years. You understand? So it doesn't matter what the religion, they're always misapplying. Right? Does that make sense? Somebody says Zeus, somebody says Thor. They kill each other. Why? Because they say they're different people. You know what I'm saying? So they're not actually understanding. You understand? So this logic makes a lot of trouble in society because when you apply, your life is going to be based on your culture. So if your culture is not based on the Shastra and not based on Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, then you're going to actually make mistakes because there will be something mundane involved. Right? If it's not based on scripture, it will be mundane. If it's not based on God consciousness, it will be mundane, even if it's based on scripture. You understand? So it's only spiritual when it's based on scripture and it's, in other words, proper work, proper consciousness. Otherwise, it is mundane. Right? No discussion. Not being dogmatic, we're just meaning the discussion ends there because it's been established. Does this make sense? Right? So, this is the problem. Arjuna can't tell the difference between mundane activity and spiritual activity. Because he thinks spiritual means no activity, and mundane means activity. So to be able to perform good work with proper consciousness, this is a new concept to the living entity. Why? Because material consciousness means karma and jnana. Karma means activity, not based on higher consciousness. Jnana means based on higher consciousness, no activity. Right? Does that make sense? So one supposedly has proper consciousness, but no proper activity. And one has proper activity, but no consciousness. So Buddha Yoga is where proper activity and proper consciousness are combined. Does this make sense? So this is now being...
Dhyan, Maharaj, that is more specifically on the consciousness.
Dhyan?
Because, you know, we'll see...
Yeah, I mean, it gets to at that level, but below that, it's karma. You perform the proper activity, I get the result. Right? Because through karma, you purify the senses. So what are they doing up to the point of dhyana?
Working.
Yeah, working, but what are they trying to do?
Working with the mind.
Working with the mind, but for what purpose? Get the result, but result in?
Liberation, that means.
They're engaging the senses to do what with the senses? Right? The senses are giving them trouble, right? So, why are the senses giving trouble? They're attached to the fruit. In other words, they're in an impure state. So the yoga system is how to purify the senses so that one is in a pure state, then one can now function on the platform of just dhyana. Does that make sense?
But dhyana is also within Buddha yoga.
It means on the higher level, yes. But only the last two, only jhana and samadhi. The lower ones, we don't follow their process. We have our own process. Does that make sense? But jhana and samadhi, that's the same within, in both. Does that make sense? In other words, meditating on Krishna is a natural part of devotional service, right? But because the materialist sees the good work as beneficial, but not proper consciousness, right? Therefore, it's not devotional service. And because it's not devotional service, therefore they have to have a mundane process to bring them to that platform. Right? But all good work is based on God consciousness, right? Because God consciousness is defined in Shastra. Does that make sense? But in looking at the Shastra from the mundane viewpoint, then you take it and come up with a system that stands on its own, that's not actually in itself Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like someone could do yoga for all kinds of material purposes, and it would be seen purely in that way, right? But how many people would generally see chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra Japa in a material way? They generally just stop doing it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because it's not from the material perspective. Right? But the concept of chanting a mantra to get some benefit, that you can look at from the material perspective and come up with all kinds of processes. You understand? So therefore, is that the yoga system, Ashtanga yoga system, though the dhyana is the important part, all this other aspect is developed to make it complete in itself, separate from devotional service. Though it's based on the shastra, which is proper work. You understand? Does that make sense? Right? So in the same way, jnana and karma. So, in other words, the activities in the Vedas are meant as proper work to be engaged in Krishna consciousness, right? But now Jaimini means the other one is Patanjali, looking at it from a mundane viewpoint. So now Jaimini looks at it from a mundane viewpoint and then takes the activities, but only for mundane purpose. Right? So therefore it appears it becomes a whole separate system. Right? But it's based on the system of devotional service. Does that make sense? So therefore all these various other aspects of it become, you know, absorbed there. Aspects that are supposed to be that if you are on a lower level of consciousness and all that, and attachment, perform these things in Krishna consciousness and elevate yourself up. But they'll take those activities, put it within their system, and then it will keep you on that mundane level of consciousness. Does that make sense? So like that, they take the devotional, the good works defined in the Shastra, and then they view them or interpret them from a non-Krishna conscious platform. Right? So that's good work without proper consciousness. So then you end up with all these other systems. Right? So Vedavyas, he's giving proper work, proper consciousness. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments on verses 3 to 9 in Renunciation Through Wisdom, chapter 1. A person should never give up his prescribed duty without scriptural authorization, for this will cause chaos in the world, since it is impossible to maintain the body without activities. Since it is impossible to maintain the body without activities, it is impossible to totally renounce activities. Right? You can't even maintain yourself without an activity, so you can't actually renounce all activities. Right? Does that make sense? You know, I mean, some of the members of the IRA tried that, but I think they lasted about 6 weeks, and then they weren't able to continue their revolutionary activities. On the other hand, the tree of material entanglement, which thrives on fruitive activities and the results, can never bring forth any hope for peace. It is for this reason that the Supreme Lord has explained how one is to perform activities, right? In other words, means the material activities, the material nature, the tree of material existence, you could say, thrives on fruit of work, or karma, right? But to maintain the body, it won't just function just on that. You can't not do activities, right? So you're stuck in between. If you perform activities, then it nourishes the tree of material existence, right? But to not nourish it, you give up the activity, but you can't actually give it up. You can give much of it, but you'll maintain some of it to maintain the body. So then how do you actually get out? There is no other method, right? In other words, performing proper activity, giving up proper activity, you know, or giving up a lower proper activity for a higher proper, but it won't work unless it's connected to God. Right? Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your duties, prescribed duties for his satisfaction. In this way, you will always remain free from bondage. Bhagavad Gita 3.9. Right. So, work done as a sacrifice has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds you. He doesn't give another alternative. Right? Remember, it's good work, you know. I mean, it's good work or bad work. That's all there is. So, good work means good work done with good consciousness. Because good work done without good consciousness is just better bad work. You know what I'm saying? The guy goes into the bank, robs the bank. But, you know, ties the people up, doesn't shoot them. He's a nice guy. Okay? You know, or he goes into the bank, robs the bank, and shoots all the people. So, which one of those is better? The one who doesn't shoot all the guys. Okay. But, is his going into a bank and robbing a bank, is that okay now that he didn't shoot everybody? No, it's still bad work. You understand? It's just, Less, more or less. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so he killed all the people, right? And so, therefore, he used, you know, a very nice, you know, what is it? A Glock or something like that. And, you know, very carefully, he nicely shot them all, so they all died instantaneously. But a previous guy who went into the bank, you know, by that, he used a baseball bat and killed all the people. So which is better? You understand? So there's always within the improper, there's more nice and less nice. But what's it based on still? It's still based on laws of God. In other words, you're not supposed to commit violence to other creatures. So therefore, even if there's violence, what's less violent is always better.
So this is where the gangster gets their code of morality.
Yes, like that. You know, yeah. You don't shoot the other
woman and children.
Yeah, yeah, like that. And you know, you take care of the guy in jail, and the guys that are just the boys that you know, they've done all kinds of bad things to your group, but that they're only doing that on the leader. So you get rid of the leader. It doesn't mean that you now shoot all them. You know, now they become your guys. You know what I'm saying? So these are all, like you said, the ethics of the gangsters. That makes sense.
Yeah. Not having the proper consciousness, even in our movement, can make us work on these principles through of regulation, of rules. And
I don't quite understand that. What's the purpose of what you're saying?
Understanding that sometimes we don't have the proper
consciousness.
Like,
yes, means if you're performing the proper work, then still there'll be benefit. Because in this case, why are you performing proper? Why is a devotee performing proper work?
At some level, he's trying to please Krishna.
Yes, it's ultimately trying to please Krishna. He may have forgotten Krishna, be absorbed in mundane things, but he's still doing that work because of the authority of proper work is coming from, you know, through the parampara to please God. So that's why even a devotee who's conscious not good still develops. You know what I'm saying? You know, unless they're so absorbed, then they may go away, but it's because of the weeds, not because of their performing of the devotional activity. right? That doesn't go away. That's eternal. So what we're saying here is therefore being conscious of it, that'll make it go quicker. That'll make it more efficient. Right? So that's why even the devotee, at some point, he connects his activity to Krishna. If he's actually done that, then in performing the activity, as long as he didn't change something, then he will get some spiritual benefit from it. Right? So that's why a lot of times devotees are like doing it for Krishna, because maybe at some point that was the consciousness, or a certain aspect is connected to Krishna. Right? You know, in other words, but there you have to watch out the same, you know, weak logic. You know, okay, I'm a family person, I connect, and I'm connecting my family to Krishna, therefore I am Krishna conscious. Right? So ABC, right? So now, I'm Krishna conscious because I took my family to the temple. Right? And so I'm Krishna conscious. Right? So that's right, it's connect. But because he's making the weakness, because I'm a family man and I've connected to Krishna, then therefore he thinks any activity I do in family life is automatically connected to Krishna. So I take my kids on vacation to, you know, the Bahamas or something like that. There may be nothing that they do in connection to Krishna, but they'll still think, I'm a Krishna conscious family person. So going to the temple, they've connected. So even if they take the family to the temple and they're completely thinking about their business all day, they still will get devotional benefit because they have connected that. But the point is, no matter how nice they are and behave so wonderfully, you know, if they, you know, while they're on vacation, they get no spiritual benefit because it's not connected, because there was no conscious effort to connect it. So consciousness and the activity were not connected. So therefore, it's not God conscious. You know what I'm saying? Not that he couldn't, but he hasn't. But he's making the misunderstanding is because I do these few things that are Krishna conscious, therefore all aspects of my household life are Krishna conscious. No, they're not, but as long as these major things are connected, those major things are more powerful than these smaller things. Therefore he still advances. You know what I'm saying? The little things he does in illusion are not as powerful as those major things that he does in Krishna consciousness. That's why he advances. But at the same time, as those little things, if not connected to Krishna, at some point will get in the way. The weeds will grow. And so sometimes that may distract him too seriously from his Krishna consciousness. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a lot, but the point is, we make this mistake that a connected one, it's all connected. No, you actually have to connect it. You know, means you're doing it, so who else has to connect it? You know, you've chosen. Means household life means you could keep it very simple or very elaborate. So the point is, who's made that decision? Right? You have. So therefore, in doing that, is that if you want, it's, you know, if it's supposedly good, if you're saying that, okay, the activities of my household life are good, so then, okay, that's good work. We'll take your word for it. Now, where's the good consciousness that goes with it? If it's there, then you can say it's all connected. If it's not, it's not connected. Something's connected, so then, you know, it makes it work. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, especially that's why you see new devotees will develop so nicely, as opposed to, let's say, ones who've been around longer in the household ashram. Because the new one, he's doing all these side things, but his consciousness is not there. So he's doing these things, but he's thinking about going to the temple and doing things and all that. So he's got good consciousness, though, even though he's doing improper work. Right? So he's not even really focusing on the improper work, because his consciousness is good. Right? But later on, he becomes used to this and becomes just a natural day-to-day part of the thing to be God conscious. So then he may not be so conscious while he's doing these other things. Right? Because it worked in the beginning, why wouldn't it naturally work now? He's more advanced. But the point is he's not following the process he was in the beginning.
Always thinking.
Yeah, always thinking. Though he may not have been very developed in his thinking, you know. But the point is he was thinking. Does that make sense? So it's science. So these, especially these next few chapters, will be pointing out these mechanics on simply if it's connected or not. That's all. right? And then within mechanics, that will be the last chapters. Right? You know, in other words, the quality of the mechanics is described in the last chapters. But that's based already on the principle that you're connecting whatever mechanics are there to Krishna. Right? Nothing is useful unless it's connected to Krishna. That's it. That's the bottom line. Then what is the quality of what you're connecting to Krishna, and what's the quality of your intellectual application? Does that make sense? In other words, prescribed duties are the best activity to offer to Krishna. Right? And then, does that make sense? Right? And then, as far as intelligence goes, that fine intelligence that can discern between the elements that the Shastra is defining, between the gross and the subtle elements and their workings and interactions, that would be a better intelligence, right? So Buddha Yoga means the combination of activities and intelligence being engaged in the Lord's service, right? So then that would mean that prescribed duties would be your best activities, and fine intelligence based on the direction of Shastra, you know, like what it said, the modes of nature and divine and demoniac nature and all these different things. So that combination would be the best offering in Buddha Yoga. Does that make sense? So the Gita then points out all these things so that you can understand. To perform all activities only as a sacrifice for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu is true freedom from the results of activities, or the real art of karma yoga, right? So in other words, here he's saying the art is the application. Art is always the application, right? Through this process of karma yoga, one is freed from the shackles of fruit of results, and one's inherent eternal loving devotion for the Supreme Lord gradually manifests. This type of karma yoga is also referred to as desireless action, or naishkarmya. Right? Or in other words, activities performed without expectation of any sense gratification. One who works in this way offers all the results of his action to the Supreme Lord instead of enjoying them himself. Right? So in other words, he says this kind, that means there's other aspects of karma yoga. So sakam karma yoga is also there. But that's only defined in that you have so much desire that that's more prominent, right? But the proper form is naishkarmya, is that you're performing the activity of karma, without desire for the fruitive result, right?
So sannyas karma yoga would be the eye hand of nishkarma?
Yes, that would be a better form of that. Yeah, because you're always going to have, see, this is something we also have to get used to, because we were describing before as you have improper activity, proper activity, right? But proper activity means proper consciousness, right? So that means proper activity and proper consciousness, and proper activity meaning without consciousness is improper activity, right? So where is the sandhi? Where is the junction between improper activity and proper consciousness?
Proper activity.
Proper activity. You understand? In other words, proper activity can be in with proper consciousness as bhakti, or with improper activity as pious mundane activities. Right? There's always a sandhi. That's where the trouble comes. Because it should be this or that. No. There's always that middle point. There'll always be. So there's two points, but there's always three considerations. Right? Because the third consideration is the overlap between the two points.
Black, white, and gray.
Yes, so that's the point. There's only black and white, because gray is made out of black and white. But the point is how you're looking at it. You know? The gray you can call white. The gray you could also call black. Like in India, gray would be called white. You know, you have a gray cheddar, they'll call it sada, because it's not dark. So the twilight is always there, right? And so it has a quality that could be in either, right? The twilight has both qualities of night and day. Does that make sense? So you're always going to have that. So here he's saying is that, naishkarmya, then it's always going to have that element of the higher level and also of the lower level. Right? In other words, that freedom from any fruit of results, at the same time as there may be an endeavor for fruit of results. But the common point is that it's being done to please the Lord. Right? So one is only being done to please the Lord exclusively, then that will be the highest form. Right? It's also you're including your own pleasure in it, so that would be a lower form.
So that would be renunciation.
Yes. I mean, in this case, renunciation. Yeah, renunciation, of course. So it's a matter of how renounced. You know, you're giving a lot or just giving a small, whatever it is. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so then we'll end here. Yeah? So then we'll continue tomorrow with the human life is meant for yajna.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.